Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Time for our series on New Zealand sporting history, and today's guest comes from a family where three different generations have represented New Zealand in three different sports: rugby, cricket and golf, or cricket, then rugby, then golf. Yes, joining us for sporting history today is New Zealand's highest ranked golfer, Ryan Fox, fresh from the US Masters. Hey there, Ryan.
Afternoon, Jesse. How you doing?
Good. Lovely to talk to you. I'm very excited to talk to you in Masters week, or the week after the Masters. How are you feeling after that big weekend?
A little frustrated, but in a good way. It's been a bit of a tough year, and I actually felt like I had a lot of positive stuff last week, gained plenty of confidence, just the result probably wasn't quite what I was after, but it's still an amazing weekend. I mean, it's probably the pinnacle of our golfing calendar, getting to play the Masters, and yeah, pretty cool to have played it and played the weekend last weekend.
You said frustrated, but you're in the right sport for that, right? You've just got to accept frustration from time to time.
Yeah, anyone that's played golf gets frustrated. Try doing it for a job.
What is going on in your head? And I take it you're referring to the fact that you had a really strong run there for a while and then went back a couple of shots and probably finished further back in the field than you wanted to. What's happening in your head when your game isn't quite where you want it to be, but you really want it to be in the right spot?
Lots of different things, to be honest. Probably some anger at times, lots of frustration. And then you've got that little voice inside your head trying to get out of your own way. I mean, everyone talks about trying to get in the zone for sport, and golf's definitely one of those where you're trying as much as possible to get into that space. And that's when everything's really clear. It just feels easy. It doesn't happen very often. And I think the hard thing with golf is it's, compared to other sports, you're not necessarily reacting to what's coming at you. You've got to kind of create it all yourself. And when things are going bad, that's when it's hard to get, you know, those little voices out of your head. And, you know, anyone that's played golf has had the thought, oh, don't miss this, or don't hit it right, or don't do this. And that's not where you want to be. And you're kind of constantly fighting those things when stuff's not going your way. When it's going your way, you don't even think about it. But unfortunately, in sport, I think, and in golf especially, it seems to not go your way more often than not.
Are you, this interview is going to be all over the place because I've got so many questions I want to ask you. Are you in a meditative state just before you swing?
Not really. You go through a process. It's, you've got your routine that you go through. So for me, it's, you know, get behind the ball. You see your shot, you've obviously picked your club and stuff like that, talking to your caddy. And then you're just trying to basically copy what you've done visually. So for me, it's all about getting out of my own way and kind of reacting to the target that's out there, whether it's, you know, a tree, the flag, a bunker, trying to hit my shot off that. When it's been really good, it's definitely, meditative's not the right word for it, but it's a very clear space. It's okay, that's what I've got to do, and you do it. You don't even think about it, and you're constantly fighting to get to that point when it feels easy and you almost don't have to think.
They have that phrase, you're seeing it like a pumpkin. Does that actually happen? Do you have days where you can't believe how easy it seems?
Yep, it doesn't happen that often,
sadly.
And Yeah. But the last time it probably happened to me was at Wentworth last year on Sunday afternoon, and I just had a bat nine that I didn't even really think. I was under a fair bit of pressure and didn't think about anything else, just hitting the golf shots I had to hit, and everything came out exactly how it was supposed to. And it's certainly nice to do it when it matters. And yeah, it's been a while. It's probably been 6 months since I've had it, but it's, you get little patches here and there where maybe you have it for a couple of shots and then it disappears again. But yeah, it's a constant fight, and that little voice in your head's always kind of there, especially when the pressure's on. You know, I don't want to do this, I don't want to do that. You've got to find a way to turn it positive, you know, that you focus on what you want to do, because the brain doesn't do negatives very well.
Yeah. And by the way, Wentworth, Ryan is referring to winning the BMW PGA Championship. A huge moment for, obviously, for him and for New Zealand sport as well. Incredible stuff. Where does your, so I referenced this before, people know Grant Fox, your dad. Where does he fit into your sporting career? Do you pick up the phone to him at all? Was there a time early on when he was a mentor or a formative sort of influence in your sporting career?
Yeah, I mean, Dad's been involved the whole way through. You know, obviously, from when I was little, he was the one that got me into sport. I've got memories of him playing when I was really young. I think he retired when I was six. He coached me in rugby basically the whole way through. And, you know, whether he's assistant coach or just helped out teams or whatever. He was the one that introduced me to golf. Always had clubs in the backyard. I first started playing golf with Dad in charity days and various things, you know, when I was probably 8 or 9, maybe a little older than that. And when I started playing competitive golf, Dad used to caddy for me a lot. Hmm. He was there the first proper tournament I ever played, in like 2005. And he even caddied a little bit as a professional for me in the early years. You know, he traveled a lot. He was kind of the psychologist. I still talk to him a bunch about stuff. It's maybe not so analytical now. It's more probably a father and son chat rather than a mentor mentee kind of chat. But it's pretty cool to have had him be a part of it the whole way. I kind of felt like last year him caddying at the Masters was like, he caddied on the par three at the Masters, which is the kind of family day out. And that was kind of returning the favor kind of thing. He invested so much time and money and everything else into helping me succeed that getting to walk that par three with me was a little bit of, he could enjoy that and go, well, this is pretty cool that, you know, we've kind of made it. In that sense,
yeah,
may have made it a little bit before that stage, but that's something that we could share together.
Yeah, for people who don't know golf well, the Masters, well, aside from being one of the majors, there is something really special about the course, the tradition, the history, and anyone with a passing interest in golf, it would be on their bucket list to attend, let alone caddy. Really special moment. And I want to mention Merv Wallace as well, who was your grandfather, not on your father's side, right, on your mother's side.
Yeah, on my mother's side, yeah. So he played cricket for New Zealand from, I hope I get this right, from about 36 to 53. Yeah. Obviously, there was a world war in between that. Yeah. I think he was coach of New Zealand after he retired as well.
Quite a successful coach.
And he also, and he... He ran a sports store, pretty famous back in the day, Wallace and Webb, that actually my mum and dad met at. That's how they got together. So
true.
He was involved in sport. He was involved in sport the whole way through, and he coached me in cricket from a very, very young age. So I got very lucky in terms of sporting genes, and I don't know how I ended up with golf out of that, but it seems to have worked.
Arguably, it could have been any of the three, right? Cricket, rugby, or golf.
Yeah, I mean, I think I was a decent enough cricketer at school and a decent enough rugby player. I probably had a fair bit to live up to in both sports, and certainly wasn't anywhere near as good as my grandfather or my dad. But I always wanted to be a sportsman growing up, and cricket was probably one, rugby was two, and golf was further down the track until I started university, and took me a little while to figure out what sport I enjoyed the most. And I'm glad I figured out it was golf in the end. It's been a pretty decent career choice so far, and hopefully I've got a little bit more to come in that regard.
Gee, so when you look around at the guys you're shoulder to shoulder with on the tour, there wouldn't have been many that waited till university to think about playing golf professionally.
No, I mean, you know, obviously Tiger's been documented that he had a club in his hand from when he was one and a half, and everything was about golf.
Yeah.
You know, Rory McIlroy was the same. There's certainly guys that picked it up late, and everyone's got their own unique story. And I certainly wasn't a bad golfer at school. I played off a 2 handicap, but yeah, I was probably very late to tournament golf. You know, I played no junior golf basically or anything like that. It was just a bit of fun with my mates. And in hindsight, it was definitely the one I enjoyed the most. And that, you know, probably helped me going into it. I think the other sports I enjoyed, but I also felt a little bit under pressure with the history and whatever else was going on there, whereas golf was kind of my own path and I really loved it. I could just go out and do it, and if it worked, it worked. If it didn't, you know, I had a uni degree to fall back on, and thankfully I haven't yet had to use that uni degree much.
How do you get on with it? I'm talking to Ryan Fox, by the way, if you've just tuned in. How do you get on with the other guys on the tour, and do you have particular friends, or is it pretty businesslike?
In the States, it's been a little bit hard to get to know guys. Everyone's got their own team, and the guys that are really good friends have generally been to college together, so I missed out on all of that. But you know, I'm still playing in Europe as well, so I've played in Europe for about 10 years now, just under, and I've got some really good mates over there. I've got some guys I played amateur golf with in Australia. Jason Scrivener's a really good mate of mine. A couple of mates from South Africa, and as long as there's no rugby on, we're pretty good mates. And I found the European side a bit more social. I think, you know, they also have a much more similar culture to us. They enjoy the same sports. You know, I think being professional sportsmen, other sports are what we're kind of into, and you know, South Africans and Australians generally are into rugby and cricket and various other sports, which why I've kind of gravitated towards those guys. But even the English or the French, you know, they love rugby. I can certainly have a passing interest in football, but I've kind of struggled a little bit with the American sports, and especially all of the Americans are into their college sport, and I certainly haven't got into any of that. So there's maybe not quite as much common ground with some of those guys as there are with some of the guys on the European tour.
Yeah. So you went pro at 25, and we should just mention that your grandfather and the death of your grandfather came at a quite an interesting time for you. I'll call it an interesting time. That's probably not quite the right word, but how did that all go down?
Yeah, so I'm going to get the dates wrong. I think my grandfather passed away in 2008, and I was actually at a tournament. It was the North Island Amateur. And he'd been sick for a while. He'd had diabetes and was in pretty bad health. And I was away at the tournament. And it's a pretty big one for us, probably the second biggest outside of the New Zealand amateur. And I got a phone call on Monday or Tuesday night saying, look, he's probably not going to make it through the night. You better come back. And I drove back from Whakatane and made it up and saw him before he passed away. And kind of mum and dad said, look, there's nothing much you can do here. You may as well go back down and play. And I ended up playing and finishing second that week, which was very strange. I think it was one of those ones where nothing else really mattered. I didn't care. And it may have actually unlocked a couple of things in that sense, that playing, you know, without the weight of expectation or anything like that actually does help. And that sort of set me on the path. I made the New Zealand squad not too long after that, and that was probably when golf became a potential career opportunity when I made that New Zealand squad. And it was kind of a little bit of a bittersweet period. Obviously, I was pretty happy with where golf was going, but you know, I was really close to my granddad growing up, and you know, he, even though he was sick, he still loved hearing, you know, about all my golf and everything like that. Probably my biggest regret my golfing career is probably that he never saw any of the success I had, and hopefully he's up there somewhere looking down and can see some of it from wherever he is. I don't know what I believe in that regard, but yeah, it'd be cool if he had some knowledge of it somehow or another.
Thank you. By the way, if you've got a question you'd like to put to Ryan Fox, send me a text on 2101. So you made the what goes into that decision to turning professional?
There's probably three distinct pathways to turning professional. For me, it was I'd done all I could in amateur golf, and I wanted to give professional golf a crack. So I went to the way people want to play tour golf mainly is you go to a Q school, which is effectively another tournament. And if you play well enough, there's normally one or two stages, potentially three or four, depending on the tour. And I went to the Australian Tour, PGA Tour of Australasian Q School at the end of 2011, and was exempted to final stage because I'd played well as an amateur in New Zealand. And I managed to finish top 10, and that got my card on the Aussie tour. There's a couple other ways you can do it. You can go down the coaching route, which a few guys have done, and then transferred into the playing route. And then if you're an absolute superstar, you can generally go on invites and play your way onto professional tour. And I certainly wasn't good enough to do that. We've had a couple of guys do it. Dan Hillier did it a couple of years ago, and Danny Lee did it before him. But yeah, I sort of went down the more traditional path in Q school, and it can be quite brutal. If you play bad at the wrong time, you don't have a job. And thankfully that I played well that week and, you know, got my card in Aussie and managed to keep it my first year, and I was kind of off and running from there.
So when you say your card, sorry, you might have explained that, but you have to earn the rights in the first place or regularly to stay a professional, or just to have a tour to play on?
Just to have a tour to play on. So basically you have a Q school to get onto a tour, and there's X amount of people going for X amount of spots. So I think in Australia, my first year, you had to finish top 10 to get what they call a full card, which was to get every tournament. And then they have a money list or a points list where a certain amount of people keep a card every year. And in Australia, I think when I started, you've got to finish top 50 on that tour, or you go back to Q school and basically start again. So golf can be pretty brutal in that sense. And I've been lucky. You know, I had a card in Aussie and I kept it. And I've, to this point, I've never lost a card on tour. I've played my way up through a couple of other tours, the Challenge Tour onto the European Tour through invites. I played my way onto the One Asia Tour early on as well. And, played my way onto the PGA Tour for this year. And, it can be pretty cutthroat. Like, I've had plenty of mates on tour that have been going really, really well and have one bad year and then all of a sudden don't have a job anymore. They're still professional golfers. They've just got nowhere to play. Yeah. So, it's one of those few sports that's, you can be flying one year and have no job the next. It's pretty brutal, but there's a lot of people trying to do it and there's a lot of money in it. So, it's always been that way, and I hope that doesn't change.
So you've got quite a nice combination then. So you're obviously consistent. You're keeping your card each year. And then your coaches have described you as aggressive, described your play as aggressive at least. Do you agree with that analysis?
Yeah, I definitely agree with that analysis. Consistency probably hasn't always been there, but you've got to take advantage of your good weeks in golf, and I've generally done that quite well over the years. I think the statistics on it overall is you make probably 80% of your money or your points or whatever in about 20% of your week. So you've got to really take advantage of those good weeks. And yeah, I've had a few wins over the years, which certainly helped keep your status and stuff like that. And I think that playing aggressive has always helped that. I had the same playing cricket growing up. I always wanted to hit fours and sixes. Plus, I hated running between the wickets. Rugby probably wasn't as aggressive because I wasn't overly big, especially compared to some of the guys we played against. But I always, when I played tennis, I always wanted to hit the ball hard and, hit winners and stuff like that. So I think that translated into golf is that aggressive mindset to take shots on, and if it works, great, and you reap the reward of it. And if it doesn't, well, you've just got to accept the consequences and figure out a way to make a par or limit the damage. And I've got better over the years of limiting the damage, and I've still tried for the most part to keep that aggressive mindset. And I'll certainly try not to change that over the years, although I'm starting to get a little bit older and losing a little bit of speed. Don't quite have the length I used to have when I was younger. But, it's the great thing about golf is I'm 37 and still feel like I've got plenty of time left in this game.
It's funny you talk about that, making the most of the weeks when you're winning money. Is it an interesting way to earn your money to have it come in chunks, lumps, and sort of inconsistent lumps at that?
Yeah, you kind of get immune to what money is doing what we do. I mean, it goes out in pretty big numbers as well. You know, I feel like, to simplify it, we're almost gambling on ourselves. We've got to spend a decent amount of money every week to do what we do. Like, I'm probably away 30 to 35 weeks a year, and have been doing that for at least the last 10 years, if not longer. You know, and you're staying in hotels and eating out most nights and stuff like that, flying all over the place. So you spend a lot of money, but obviously when you do well, you can make a lot of money. And you know, I've been lucky enough to have some pretty good checks in this game, but I've also had plenty of periods where I've missed a bunch of cuts in a row, and you're probably dropping $5,000 a week minimum on a major tour when you're playing. And if you're missing a bunch of cuts that in a row, it gets pretty painful pretty quickly.
Yeah. And you're a family man too, so I'm sure you, like I do, have chats with your wife to think, it'd be quite handy for something to come in about now.
Yeah, I've certainly had that this year a couple of times. I've had missed a couple of cuts in a row, and you know, traveling with two kids and everything around America is relatively expensive. So yeah, there's been a couple of weeks where I've felt like I really needed a paycheck, and thankfully I've had a couple. So I'm kind of running about even this year.
Drew's also got lots of questions, as expected. Drew says, you seem to have a knack of sinking some bombs on the putting greens, more so than most players. What do you put that down to? I'm not familiar with that slang, but that means getting them in the hole from a reasonable distance away, does it?
Yeah, pretty much. I don't know. I think the long putts, it just becomes really creative. You're just trying to see what it does in your head. It's not technical at all. Some of the short putts, you think more about technique. The long ones, you just kind of get up and go, okay, see the slopes and kind of hope you get it right. And I don't know, maybe I've never really thought about that other than, yeah, maybe it's just a bit more creative and I just get out of my own way, don't think about anything technical, and just kind of whack it and hope. And if it goes in more than it should, that's always a good thing.
Hey, I wanted to mention your connection to Shane Warne that some people might know about. In fact, you paid tribute to him after winning the Alfred Dunhill Links Champs. Can you tell us how you came across him and what you made of the guy?
Well, Warney was an absolute legend to start with. And, you know, I was honoured and lucky to be able to call him a friend. And I met him through golf. I think it was at the 2015 New Zealand Open. He came down amateur player for that event while he was commentating the Cricket World Cup, and I hit it off with him pretty well. Ended up playing with him on a day at the Dunhill Links later in the year. That's a big pro-am we have on the European Tour, and we got along great. I still love cricket. Probably would watch cricket more than any other sport, and really enjoyed walking around with him and quizzing him about stuff. And a couple of years later, when I was on tour full-time in Europe, I get a text from Warnie out of the blue. I didn't know he had my number or anything. He goes, Foxy, I'd love to play the Dunhill Links with you. And I'm going, A, why is Warnie texting me? And B, why does Warnie want to play with me? And of course I say yes. And we had a great time together, and he was my partner at that event for, I think, 6 years. We finished second as a team 1 year, and we had a lot of fun, plenty of cricketing stories. He was known for being a bit of a larrikin off the golf course and the cricket pitch, so there was plenty of those stories that went around as well. And I won the event in 22 after he passed away, and it was I certainly would have loved to have him there. I know how much he loved being in the thick of things. You know, he was such a competitor. He loved every bit of that. And I saw a little bit of his competitive spirit in golf. Even though he wasn't a great golfer, if he needed to do something, he could pretty much will it to happen. And you could see how on the cricket pitch he could do these miraculous things. And, I would have loved to have shared that moment winning with him in 22, but kind of, yeah, I said it earlier, I don't know how I feel about these things, but I kind of felt like he was there with me. I felt something that whole week. I was just really, really calm And, you know, under pressure coming down the last few holes, I didn't really think about too much and managed to get the job done. And it was, yeah, it was, again, a bit bittersweet that, you know, I won that event. It was the biggest win of my career at the time, but I didn't get to share it with my normal partner at that event. But, you know, again, I kind of hope he was watching it from somewhere and you know, had a couple of vodka Red Bulls to celebrate.
What's been your favourite moment so far in your professional career?
I've got two for you, and they're quite different. One was winning the BMW PGA at Wentworth. You know, that was an amazing experience, the biggest event we have in Europe, and I took down a bunch of the Ryder Cup players in doing so, and, you know, that'll always be a career highlight. And for completely different reasons, last week in the par three comp at the Masters, I managed to have my wife and kids there and to share that for the first time. They didn't get to go in 22 when I first, in 23 when I first qualified, because my wife was pregnant, and it was a big motivation to get back there this year to let them experience that. It's such a cool event, and my daughter loved running around inside the rope. Well, my eldest loved running around inside the ropes. I'm not sure what my youngest thought of it, to be honest. Mm-hmm. I think she was a bit overawed by the whole experience, but to be able to share that with them, that was just an amazing experience. I got to do it with Dad the year before, which was really cool, but to do it with you know, the family, that's memories I won't forget. And, you know, that's two very different feelings and that I've had from golf, but it's pretty hard to separate those two as a moment.
What's the dream? I know it was a dream to play at the Masters. You've done that now a couple of times. So what's the dream from here?
Dream would be to win one.
Yeah.
I mean, the Masters would probably be the top of the list, but I'd certainly take the Open Championship, the US Open or the PGA. You know, any major championship, I certainly wouldn't complain at. I've been very lucky that I've ticked off a lot of my dreams that I would have written down when I first turned professional, you know, to play on a major tour, to play a major, to play the Masters, to play on the PGA Tour. You know, I've won a couple of big events around the place. You know, I've still got a couple other goals I'd love to tick off, winning on the PGA Tour, but the ultimate one would be to win a major. I think throwing the New Zealand Open in there would be pretty high up the list as well. I'd love to win one of those. I haven't really gone close either. So, and I've unfortunately missed the event the last couple of years. So yeah, that's pretty high up the list too. So yeah, at 37, I'm running out of time a little bit, but I've still hopefully got enough time to accomplish a few more goals.
It's hard to believe in a game like golf that 37 would be, you know, the sort of the back nine. I guess you have the seniors tour from 50.
Yeah, I don't know if that's a goal or not. I don't know if my body will hold out that long, but I think golf sort of changed in the last 10 or 15 years. I think since Tiger came along, golf became more athletic, faster, stronger. Guys are coming on tour a lot earlier now than what they used to. And I think careers are ending a lot younger now than what they used to. You know, I think if you look back into the 90s and the 80s, guys were considered at their peak in their mid to late 30s. Now, you know, you look at Scottie Scheffler's 27. The majority of the top 10 in the world are under 30. And that's, yeah, golf's definitely becoming a younger, well, professional golf at least is becoming a younger person's game. But there's still guys competing on tour in their mid to late 40s.
Sorry to interrupt you. Thank you so much for your time. We're out of time. All the best for the future, and thanks for the memories.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.